sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
J-Flo.
And welcome to our monthly special, Crash Course for Bart Kornberg, or...
The Cronin and Bonathon.
This week, we will be reviewing Stereo. John will give us the plot in five words, give our first thoughts, and then we'll do a deep spoiler analysis. But before we kick off for Bart Kornberg, or... What was it?
The Cronin and Bonathon.
Cronin and Bonathon. We go back to TV Corner. We are reviewing Ju-on Origins Episode 5. The one with the psychic. So
the one with the mushy white wax baby or whatever the fuck it was.
Yep.
Full disclosure.
Yeah.
I had to go back and rewatch it because in my sick stupor, remember, I accidentally watched too many ahead.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, what a wild ending. I wonder what happens in the last episode. I accidentally watched the last episode.
Oh, my God, John. Is this your grudge against me just being so far ahead?
I'm just trying to, you know, skip ahead to Yellow Jacket season 3, 2025.
Yeah, we're trying to just get there. I think the series has picked up finally, and I thought this was another really solid to great episode. When he said he was a psychic writer, that didn't resonate to this episode, and he like actually shows his psychic abilities.
I think he didn't know that he had them until he went back to the house and it awakened his abilities because he was remembering everything all of a sudden.
I could have sworn it said on his book he's a psychic stories volume something.
Yeah, there was something about the way they did the interview in the first episode too.
Right.
I don't know. A lot of the stories get kind of weird and convoluted.
Yeah. And I love that we're now like streamlined. We're not introducing any more characters. Things are like all the little like story beats are like all the little story stuff is like popping up now cohesively. So much better overall. We finally kind of get an idea of, oh my God, the young girl who was raped in the first... I don't remember her name offhand.
Oh, yeah. She is a prostitute? No,
she's a prostitute.
Sex worker that is... also has heroin or something? Like, deals drugs, possibly? Question mark? Because her deadbeat... I'm assuming ex-husband. I'm guessing they separated. They make it seem that way.
He ran away and never... returned, right?
Yeah. And then he shows up randomly.
Yeah.
And proceeds to fall in a bathtub and he can't get out. Like, okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, so we kind of get a semi-resolution. I feel like she'll probably pop up in the last episode as kind of a finale, right? But it's revealed.
Oh, I don't know.
Do I? And
accident.
Yeah, so she kills her husband, rapist,
baby daddy.
It's revealed that the baby was given to her by the woman she saw as a teenage girl that was up in the attic or whatever. I don't know if don't want to be presumptuous that if Japan have addicts or not, but so, but it was, she was able to see up into the home.
It's on the other side of the world, so it would be considered the basement.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. Everything's upside down. Drive on the other side of the road.
Yeah, cars drive in reverse over there. You get used to it.
So she never was pregnant with the baby. The baby just appeared, and so they were cursed. So the baby, this dad, quote unquote, was able to see it, right? Like somebody gave her that baby.
Yes.
Yes.
So the baby never, no, the baby's that quiet kid, right? The kid that's always whispering people to run away.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then she kills her deadbeat husband.
Right.
Shortly after she has a, what they call in the streets, a John. And that dude is like, rips his condom off and tosses it out the window on top of like an AC unit or something. And then goes down and then has like some really weird dorky dialogue. Like, oh, I really needed a bust or whatever. I was like, okay, there you go. That's the writing I was looking for.
Yeah,
and then kills her husband. But it kind of also made it seem like whatever had possessed her kind of popped up and like forced this killing. And then that kind of cursed the guy to be a ghost also, a ghost.
Yeah, pretty much. It's kind of like, starting to make more sense now for me. Like, it's not, the house is kind of like the central evil curse thing, and it's kind of spreading out. It can spread out to other people, so there's multiple quote unquote origins, right? Yes. It's kind of like the idea.
So that is more reminiscent of the original Japanese version of the movie. Which you're kind of only at the house for a little bit, and then the second movie you like never are in the house.
Yeah, so I don't think I've never seen the Japanese sequel, only the American versions.
The Japanese originals.
Yes, the Japanese originals.
I was kidding.
You mean Sarah Michelle Gellard
before the sequels. She anti-Buffied it.
Yeah, and I like that there's a lot of, I mean, I think we're kind of underselling. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening in this episode with the psychic, because they were searching for this girl, and find the house. And it was kind of fucked up how like the guy who owns the house is kind of like super casual about selling it to people, even though he knew all these murders were going on in it. And
because his name is actually Origins. I don't know if you knew that.
Was it?
A lot of really fun stuff happens in this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the girls from the beginning that helped the deadbeat husband, whatever, rape that girl, appear finally again.
We can assume that they're dead, right? We can assume they're both dead. So when she was led...
exactly the same.
Yeah, we can assume that when she would, they were, I guess I'm assuming that's the resolution now, is that when that girl was led away by the other dead friend, that they both died, they're dead, right?
Yes.
You would read
the
it?
Assumption. Yeah.
Okay, and so that's why they pop up here again.
We just never found their bodies, right? They just kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird how they kind of led her away. And apologize for ruining her life.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think we've seen the ghost do anything that nice before, or like the curse.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe it's because the curse understands none of this was her fault, I guess? I don't know. I don't know how the curse works.
Yeah.
But then there's the weird... like Stay Puft Marshmallow Man baby scene.
Yeah.
Where you realize that this curse spared this guy for whatever reason, but I think it's just to spread the word of the curse.
Right. Because, but it killed the sister.
Yes.
Yeah, he killed his sister. And
and in a similar vein of what, God, I forgot her name. It's just hard because I'm not, you know, we're very American, so we have a hard time.
Yeah.
With certain languages. The girl whose life was fucked up because of whatever cruel prank these people were playing also broke the window of this place.
Mm-hmm.
In the same fashion, this black or of like void looking ghost thingy tried to like break in and kidnap our main psychic guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm, you know, I'm excited to see what that's about in the last episode. I'm sure something will happen. I don't know for a fact. So,
yeah. And then, yeah, this like, again, like it's like some nice like character developments with like a bunch of like crazy shit going on in this episode. Yeah. They didn't make like, you really have to like be following in the moment of like what's happening, because it's very kind of like jumping around, because he's literally like having, he ends up like finding the house, and once he goes in there, he's able to like again like trigger his ability to like see different events from his perspective and other people's perspectives. Like, yes. So he's able and to also, feel all of them
outside perspective of him as a child.
Yeah, like his own memories or interaction with the house. So,
yeah, which I thought was interesting that he's seeing himself, which I think happens in the movies too. Like that's how people kind of remember things. They're kind of thrown in the moment,
mm-hmm.
of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, he's up in the attic and he starts freaking out at the cops like, no, don't go over there. Don't go over there. And guess what they do? I'm just kidding. You are freezing on me.
Yeah, yeah. My internet connection is rapidly dying here. I apologize. Oh. I can see and hear you sort of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can see you now.
I wonder if it's because we're not talking good enough about The Grudge and I'm a little bit worried.
Yeah. What else can we add to this?
Yeah, no, this was like a fun episode. Maybe I liked the previous one a little more.
Yes. Yeah, the other one was shocking.
Yes.
And this one had some nice... Go ahead.
I was going to say, this one was just a little more like, ooh, ghosts. Like, the worst thing we got was, you know... finding out that this woman's life had gotten worse, like it had gotten to a point where it got really, really bad, mm-hmm. and then she ends up killing that guy finally, and now that guy's a ghost, and yeah, now she's disappeared, and they're looking for her.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, on to the finale. I'm really glad the show picked up. I mean, it's 6 episodes, and it was kind of a slow build. But I like that these last 2 episodes are kind of gearing up for the finale, the final episode. So,
yes. Which I'm wondering if they were anticipating a second season, but that's neither here nor there. I have no idea, actually.
Yeah, I would say. I think. They seem to have more of a clear idea, and hopefully everything's going to make sense. No plot holes.
They would most certainly tie up everything at the end and not make it like a grand,
be a satisfying meal, yes. If you will,
a morsel,
a little morset of deliciousness,
a little delicious juan.
Delicious juan. Yeah, but I'm enjoying it so far. It's good, it's fun, it's fast, it's like 30 minutes, so that's,
yeah,
the perfect length.
Yeah, and I agree with, like, I like how they're kind of just, it's becoming more linear as the episodes go on. Because even though the first 3 episodes were shorter than these, I think, by like, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, They were so fucking dense with like different storylines. I was like, I have no idea what's going on.
It's almost was very overwhelming. Yeah, I remember us speaking about that. It was a little overwhelming because it would just like introduce stuff and then they would just introduce more stuff and this more stuff. And literally somebody dies in the first episode we don't see again. And it's kind of banker. Right. The banker. Right. So.
I forgot about that.
And like so many people. And I kind of like the idea of chronicling the house, you know, like it has this deep history. I just feel like maybe the first couple of episodes they were trying to squeeze too much mythology or, you know, into the show, too many story bits to be paid off later. So
I wonder if it's just so you keep guessing like what, like I don't know, like they want you to think that you're gonna figure something out. But I never would have called that psychic guy was going to be like a part of the house at the very beginning. And he's possibly a part of the beginnings of the Grudge.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. Or that Sarah Michelle Gellar buys the house at the last episode.
What?
Spider! I'm just kidding.
Or Kayako versus Sodako. Or I probably said
yeah. Alrighty. Are we good?
You want to add anything else? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'll give it, you know, 7-6 spooky bones, and until next time. Just kidding. We need to start our Cronin and Boninathon.
Yes, we are reviewing 4 by Kornberg Crash Course. First one up is his first. Feature. No, that's not really a feature, right?
No. I mean, kind of. You could totally tell you made it in college.
Yeah, it's his first college short movie because we went all the way back. But hey, we're getting ahead of ourselves. This one's called Stereo. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny. 5 words. Plot summary. Rolando, drum roll, please. Yes, well, I just want to tell you, so it's interesting. I you know, typed in Stereo on YouTube, and it's a very wild concept. So you can hear different elements of songs and music depending on what side that they mixed it on. And that's what Stereo is. So that's it, you know. Give it 10 out of 10 stars because it was an innovative, you know, invention. And thank you, Mr. Stereo, for creating Stereo.
Of the Stereo family empire.
For the Cronin and Boninathon's first entry, Stereo, coming in at number 3, Cronenberg's Free Love and Drugs.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
This is, you can tell, you know, like, obviously he was a fucking hippie. Now it all makes sense. Coming in at number 2 for the Cronin and Boninathon, Stereo, Lestat's early gay experimenting.
That will be much funnier once we, if you watch the movie.
And coming in at number 1 for Cronin and Bonin's first entry, Stereo, bunch of horny nerds muted.
That is the most accurate of this. But so before we even dive into Stereo, do you just want to share a little bit about Kornberg and what your relationship with this movies are, what you've thought of him, what do you think of his work?
You know, my earliest experience with Cronenberg was probably that's actually tough. Because my mom is super into science fiction movies, and these are closer to science fiction than horror. So it was between Scanners or his remake of The Fly. Right. It was one of those two. But I remember I saw both those at a very young age. which, I don't know, probably not a good idea. But
so you're saying your parents didn't go by the rating board box on the back of the box?
Nah, they're like, it's Jeff Goldblum. And was it Gina Davis?
No. It's about a fly. What could hurt him? Nothing's going to.
And also, like, Scanners is super, like, science fiction-y, so they're like, no, this is fine.
That's it's fine. Not horror. Yeah.
It's science fiction. Yeah. It's different.
It's different.
But I will say this movie, I kind of feel like has college Rolando and Johnny written all over it. Like,
yes,
we
would have
been like, oh, you got to watch this movie. Oh, we got to make a movie like this. It's fucking genius.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I've aged a little bit. You have as well. And I'm like, it's a little boring. I mean, it's cool. I like it. But also, maybe it was like 20 minutes too long. And it's only an hour long.
We should probably preface that.
Yeah.
This episode will probably be about or longer than the movie. So just keep that in mind. Quickly for me and Kornberg, I think I remember Dead Ringers first was like his first movie that kind of got on my radar. And then I remember, and then I really wasn't, kind of was very, I don't know, I didn't have much access to movies much of my youth until maybe around high schoolish time. I started going to rent videos and stuff. So I think Existenz was, I remember seeing a big deal about like, ooh, David Cronenberg's coming, new movie coming out. I gotta watch it. It's gonna be a trip.
It was okay.
It wasn't very good. it's super average. Yeah.
Very late 90s. I don't know why everybody wanted to make a movie that looked the same in the late 90s or 2000s.
Or even like, and so right around 99 is when I finally got the sort of bite for movies. And I just kind of, if anybody knows anything about me, I go like super hard. If I like something, I go really hard into it. So
yeah.
If I get into movies, I just like, I saw everything until I became familiar. And I saw, that's where kind of during that period, 99 to 2012, 13 is when I was like obsessed with movies. So that's when I kind of caught up with, you know, like Naked Lunch, The Fly, Dead Zone, stuff like that. And I was, and actually I'm more of, or I was more familiar and fan of his sort of dramas, prestige work, you know, like History of Violence,
yeah,
which is really good. Spider, which is also really good. Ralph Fiennes, it's a great movie. And what's that other one he did with? Eastern Promises.
Eastern Promises, yeah.
Yes. So, and that's kind of that, during that decade-ish time is where I kind of caught up with all his work. And I've, and generally, I'm a fan of his work.
Crash is probably one of my favorites of his.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think we talked about before, but I'm not sure we talked about on the pod, but just how when Crash, the fucking movie, which I think only came out like a handful of years later, the critically acclaimed film with like Brad Pitt, The Intertwined Stories.
Right. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah. That was like 2001, 2002?
Something and like that, yeah.
Crash came out in 96. Yeah, something like that.
But I remember somebody talking about like, oh man, have you seen that movie Crash? It's so good. I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I agree. Yeah, fuck yeah, that movie's great. It's insane, yeah. Sexy yeah. movie. And they're like, oh, okay, I mean, I guess. I had no idea that some award or Oscar-worthy fucking movie came out.
Yeah. So, wait, the... What do you mean? They're not fucking? This movie's about racism?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They taught us all about racism. How it's bad.
And I think, like, I was more familiar at one point with Cronenberg as an actor because my favorite movie for a minute mm-hmm. there was Nightbreed, and he mm-hmm. kind of plays the bad guy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Excellent that, and then he pops up also in Jason X. So
most importantly in Jason X.
And his pod favorite, Jason X. So yeah, I think what we decided to do is watch four movies by Cronenberg, but this is some of his earliest work, which is Stereo is going to be kind of like his first movie he got funded, which is noted here that he famously lied to the Canadian government to get funding for it. I believe is it the the constant trivia that's surrounding this movie. And I think that, and it's very it's very much a short film, but yet it exudes a lot of his trademarks. So if like you're a Cronenberg fan, there's value in watching this movie. But
yeah,
and because you see all his little like
bad, it is pretty cool. Like
cinematography is amazing.
Up the sound design, and you know they have that white noise going on the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
The location is spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's very, I guess the way we could describe it, it's very like there's no sound.
No.
There is some narration. Very dry narration. but it's sort of like, we're like almost a fly on the wall of this experiment, and we're just, the bits of information we're getting is through this very, almost like if somebody's reading a paper on some sort of medical thing. That so a lot of the stuff kind of just is very dry, goes over your head.
Yes.
And we had the visuals are there, but there's like no sound. So it is a little bit of a tough sit through, but I still think that it's more interesting than Skinamarink.
If that, oh yeah.
So that tracks.
I was going to say there's something just like painfully hip about it too. I don't know. There is like,
yes,
the movie was just too cool. Like he was intentionally trying to make it cool. And then also saying, like, no, it's not intentional. It felt kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Cronenberg's work can be described as provocative, right? Like, because here he has... he's very...
Oh, also, we saw boobs on YouTube.
So,
important to know.
Yes. If you guys are interested in watching it, it is available on YouTube. yeah, I think that, like you said, like, there is a bit of, like, hipness to it in that the clothing, the cinematography is very fluid. He has that a few shots very early on. He has a shot where it's a wide angle lens, and they're tracking with it. They're following in it, so you see all of this like giant the space of the university college where they shot this, yeah. And then you see the figures are kind of small. A similar effect was used recently in Poor Things. So if you want kind of like a reference. But yeah, I think it really solidifies a lot of his trademarks and styles, and like kind of shows like the shape of like a lot of his work. He's always kind of pushing like experiments, and it's very kind of like clinical in its approach, and there's always like, yeah, kind of like there's like sex involved with it. So it was kind of like, if I saw this just blindly, like you said, we both saw this in college, we'd be like, oh my god, it's gonna be like the best movie. Like this, I think that's why we sat through a lot of what's that filmmaker, the the one who does Gaspar Noé movies, you know what I'm talking, yeah. Yes, yeah. Like Gaspar Noé's, like we were super, Gaspar Noé was like, everybody was so like,
he was the it guy.
He was the it guy, and everybody was like, oh my god, for our little like college group and stuff, because of his work and stuff. And
now like I just don't bother to sit through his movies. I'm like, eh.
I need more than that. Yeah, it's like Gaspar Noé's movies are more about him and like, look how cool everything, I'm making everything. But not that there isn't any value in his movies. It's just like,
no,
it's just something we're looking for more. We're looking for something different now as moviegoers.
I would also add there was something very Kubrick about this short film.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
And I was like, oh man, is this just like he just saw Space Odyssey? But it would have literally have had to been like half a year before, and then he made this movie super quick, which it doesn't seem like it. I mean, yeah, maybe it could have been. Yeah.
Great point. Yeah. We should mention that this movie was released in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So. Even though everybody looks like, if you had just put this in color and told me this was made like last year, I'd believe you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And, there's, incredible amount of like, tension in the movie, which is kind of like, and cerebralness that kind of is scary. Like, because we should probably know that we're, you know, we're a horror movie podcast. We're judging it like if it's a horror or not. But I think that the most horror-ish it gets, I think it leans more sci-fi than anything. But I think the most horror-ish moments is that, like, there are shots, there's like, he creates a mood that's like, it's a bit upsetting to, like, I don't know what was going to happen next in this movie. Does that make sense?
Right,
like,
yeah.
And he builds tension in each scene that he does. And that's like, that's kind of like early on, he's developing those techniques he's going to use much later on in his career.
And I think also the narration is evidence of what he probably intended to shoot if he had the money. Because there's a lot of graphic depictions of previous people that did this experiment, drilled, like one guy drilled into his forehead to relieve some pressure. You know, there's also moments where like people are clearly talking and they're talking back to each other. So I didn't understand, because the whole point of this short was that they develop a telepathetic ability.
Telepathetic, that's fine.
They develop a telepathy, but they're dependent on each other. And then it becomes too much. But I couldn't tell if that's what was really going on or if it's because they all got addicted to some pills that they kept finding.
Right, yeah. They were described as like love, free love, something kind of pills or something. Yeah,
something like that.
Meaning, yes, they were clearly like giving them all kinds of highs and maybe giving them like reactions to their behavior, the behavior that they exhibited. They were very, like, you know, like you said, they were having sex, they were getting naked, they were experimenting. So
There's a part where they have an orgy. Is this a spoiler? Is there spoilers in this movie?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so, right?
There isn't, no. I don't know, no.
They're all eating, like, eggs? Balls? I don't know. And then they're like, oh, this makes us horny. Yeah. So I just read that it was a little confusing because it really did look like they were having conversations that we just couldn't hear because it was muted. Apparently the 35 millimeter camera they had made too much noise, so that's why they didn't shoot any sound. So I'm wondering if it was just like an afterthought.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, because the narrative is, there is almost no narrative to this piece. So
the guy that I called Lestat, because he ran around in a cape at the very beginning.
Yes.
Which also, I don't know if that was intended to be comedic, but it's like a good minute and a half of him walking around the university trying to get in.
Right.
Like, kind of, yeah, like comedic. Dude, I was like, yeah. And then he just, like, it's a cut scene to him being escorted inside by some guy. And like, okay. But that guy's sister was also in the cast, and she plays the alternate personality of the one woman that survives at the end. But I'm also like, who survived in this? I don't understand. Because it at the end, it made it sound like everybody was dead. And then,
yeah,
like one person survived.
Supposedly, I don't know sure.
Who. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess
it was the guy that kind of looks like the guitarist of Interpol.
Yeah. No, he got violent, I think. Yeah. he put a shirt on and got incredibly violent with some of the women. So,
and then I didn't understand the very last shot. There was like an eye in the dirt, but I wasn't sure if we were supposed to believe it was a real human eye, because obviously it was plastic and not real. I'm not 100% sure.
I thought that they were like dead, right? I thought it was somebody dead in the
brush. confused. Yeah. I was like, oh, is that...
Was it wasn't a very convincing eye.
No, at all.
Put it that way, so, yeah.
It looked like they popped, like, a cheap doll's eye out, or, like, not even, like, a... It could have been a Polaroid picture of a plastic eye. I don't know.
Maybe they used it in Ju-on in that sequence.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Whoa! Connected. Yeah, so I think, are you going to show this movie at the next party you're at?
I think so. I'm going to wait until I run into like the most pretentious fucking artist that I can possibly run into, because I have left those circles, but I would love to be like, oh, you haven't seen this? Wow.
Wow.
It's on YouTube. It's been up for 2 years already.
Where you got to get on that, man. Just blow your mind.
Ronald Mladzik, his first film with Cronenberg.
Yes, he will be... Remember that name. He does pop up in a few of the movies we are reviewing.
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
And apparently they stayed friends because there's a premiere photo of Naked Lunch and he takes a photo with Cronenberg. So I guess they stayed close.
Yeah, Naked Lunch is what, the 90s?
Something like that, yeah.
80s? So
he... Ronald passed away at the age of 70-something, and he was a retired film college professor.
Got it. Got it. Cool. Yeah. Nothing to say.
This was written and directed by David Cronenberg.
It's shot in black and white. Should probably mention that.
So...
This is going to be the shortest episode ever.
So he was 26 when he made this.
Okay.
Something to note. So he was 26 in 1969. That's how old David Cronenberg is.
Yes. Okay. Very old man.
And in other news, I don't... Maybe we should add this to our list. Maybe have like a surprise fifth viewing of The Death of David Cronenberg. It is a 1 minute short. Oh. David Cronenberg wrote, and it was directed by his daughter and him.
Hmm.
About, yeah, his mortality.
Yeah, I know that his daughter's directing stuff, and his son. His son is actually getting...
Yeah, his son did... what is the one? Shit.
Possessor,
yes. Which got around to watching.
No, almost reviewed it on the show. Did he also do Infinity Pool? Who did Infinity Pool? Cronenberg. I think it was Cronenberg, wasn't it?
Or Brandon, you mean?
Yes, the son.
Yes, he did. He did do Infinity Pool. He also did Antiviral, which I did watch that movie, and I had no idea that was him.
That was a suggestion also for the show, but yeah.
It's okay.
I'll watch it on my own time. Yeah.
It's mostly about... I want to say it is a horror
allergies?
Movie, but...
Huh? Yeah, allergies?
No, it's about STDs. It is a... Ew. Weird... Like, it is about people purposely injecting and inflicting themselves with different celebrity STDs that they have, like, packaged in vials and stuff like that. Like, people's obsession with celebrity status and how they feel. And
that's good. That's like another party movie to watch. Put it on.
Yeah, and another short by Brandon Cronenberg. Maybe we can add to the list. It's got a very catchy short title called Please Speak Continuously and Describe Your Experiences as They Come to You.
Wow.
Go ahead and repeat that to me, please, so you remember it.
It says here in David Cronenberg's trivia, he was offered to direct some pretty big stuff like Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
RoboCop. Top Gun. And Total Recall. Which is... Total Recall would have been really good.
That one would have been really good. Because, I mean, I do love Total Recall for what it is.
Yes.
It's just very campy, kind of.
Action-y, campy movie.
Man... I just don't think anybody can really top Paul Verhoeven's take on a lot of things.
Yeah, he was a fun director. He was a fun mainstream director. I'm so glad he got the chance to direct some big mainstream stuff, because he was just wacko, bizarro.
Yeah.
Guy. Yeah.
I remember my previous relationship, I showed my partner RoboCop, and they really didn't want to watch it. Oh, not that they didn't want to watch it. They were just like, oh, you know, RoboCop is going to be, you know, look, because I think people that have never seen RoboCop assume it's going to be, you know, corny or like, it's about a robot dude who walks like stiff as a fucking board and
RoboCop
talks as close as he can as like a robot, right?
Yeah.
And then they ended up watching it with me, and they were like, I didn't think it was going to be that fucking hard hitting. It's such a heavy movie. I'm like, oh, it's Paul Verhoeven.
Yep. Yep, it's
the most fun movie he did during this era was Starship Troopers, and even that one's kind of all over the place.
Well, he did a movie like Bernadette, which I heard is pretty wild, about a nun who has sex, I think,
or something. What?
And it's pretty supposedly very, you know, Paul Verhoeven-ish, you know? It's like his return to form, from what I understand. I never got around to watching it.
I didn't, you know, and it makes sense that he did Hollow Man, the one with Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
The more I think about it, because there is one pretty fucked up scene where he decides, since he's invisible, he's going to go rape this girl that he like spies on. And I'm like, what the fuck?
That is, yeah, pour her open to a T. Yes. So.
Just showgirls. I mean, I know we're in the Cronin and Bonin.
Don, yeah. Yes. Anything else? This might be our shortest episode, I said already, but so is there anything else you want to add to Stereo?
We're getting to like a pretty average time.
I don't know if I have 10 more minutes of this.
So there is oh fuck, what's his name? Hold on one sec. There's a very funny meme of where it said how to tell David Cronenberg and David Byrne apart. David Byrne, big suit, little head. David Cronenberg, big head, little suit. So nobody's ever confused again.
Yeah, I did see this. It's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Damn, yeah, I don't know.
That's it, folks. That's all we got.
I think, full disclosure, we're also very excited because we're going to go watch a very fun band in a few hours.
Yes, that I'm so happy you told me about, and I heard everything I can about them this week. So therefore, I'm now an expert in this band.
Which will be interesting. I think this is one of those bands, I'm pretty sure, that's going to be pretty big soon. But we are lucky enough to get on the ground level.
Yeah.
Because I kept missing the train on a lot of those bands where I was like, oh, well, they'll play again, right? It was only $20. And then the next time they'll play, it was like 70. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Super excited. Maybe we can give a report on that. We'll see how the Shivers goes, or what's the next Cronenberg movie?
Oh, yeah. There's... right? Yeah.
I think Shivers is our next review. Spoiler, guys, if you don't want to know what we'll review next, but we're watching Shivers.
Yeah. I mean, maybe just you don't have to listen to that part where we're going to watch Shivers and then Brood and then Videodrome. It doesn't matter. I'm sure you've stopped listening by this point.
<'Cause we've been laughs> I know we have.
Babbling about Paul Verhoeven. But I think we both really love David Cronenberg a lot more, but let's just go on a tangent about Paul Verhoeven for whatever reason.
Yes. Let's quickly end this show now. So, John, let's rate it. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Sexy bones. Well, I know what you know. Show us your sexy spooky bones.
don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Stereo, the first entry in the Cronin Abononathon, two separate ratings.
Okay.
I'm going Let's to give hear. College John.
College John
is going to give this a 10 out of 10. Adult John is going to give this a 5.
No,
I'll give it a 6.
You'll give it a 6.
Still cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that this is an interesting movie. I'm going to give it a 5. It's an interesting movie if you're a Korberg fan. Like, if you're a completionist and you want to see, like, early stuff of his style, direction, and his interest as a filmmaker, like, it's... And if you're, like, a cinephile, this is a great movie to kind of just watch. There's also, like, I remember getting, like, for whatever reason, I thought, like, I saw Sofia Coppola's first short, Lick the Star, on IFC Channel, when IFC Channel was, you know, they actually showed stuff on IFC Channel.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember watching it, and it was like, wow, that was, like, super good. And then, like, the next year, she came out with Virgin Suicides. And, yeah, she kind of just blew up after that. And I was like, so they're out there, these short films by really good directors, so...
I kind of miss IFC for what it was. I mean, that's where you got all the weird horror movies. Like, what was it called? Black Sheep or whatever? The one about the killer sheep?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I was like, what is it? I love this.
It was really good.
Which also, in case anybody's wondering, Sofia Coppola's latest effort, Priscilla, is a big pile of hot garbage.
That's because you hate women, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, how dare they? Elvis was a saint. No, I was just like,
I have the candle of him that I light every day for Elvis. No, yeah, I got
you. No, it was just uninspired. I mean, it felt like, I get Priscilla did, or not Priscilla. It was Priscilla Presley, like, kind of spearheaded the whole thing. And it kind of feels
based
like.
Based on her book.
And she was also the executive producer on it. And it does feel like. You can feel her wanting to tell the truth, but then be like, but no, he was still kind of nice. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you shouldn't have had anything to do with it.
Yeah. And I think I read that Lisa Marie was adamantly against the movie.
Oh.
She was just like, why are you trying to destroy my dad? Or something like that. She wrote a letter to Sophia. So, but I think.
Is he conditioned a 15-year-old girl?
So let me just state now. As of now, I have not seen the movie, but from everything I've read and get the sense of, it's about how a very specific time in our history when, you know, men were terrible, and women. But it's also about a woman finding herself and finding, you know, how she got sucked up into this. It's very interesting because, like, she got sucked up into, like, this entire world and. Kind of became a Barbie doll, you know, like a for Elvis, and it's about her finding her agency and herself. And I just don't know how well Sophia executed those ideas. You know, I haven't seen the movie.
Like I said, it just felt so uninspired. I don't know. And then the movie ends, and I was like, "Oh, that was it!" Like it's one of those movies.
Yeah. I totally get you. All right, that's enough for Korberg.
For the bun and a thumb. The cone and a bun and a thumb.
All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.